is a holiday. Okay, well, luckily we have our visitor today, not Paul Bixby, even though I've promised Paul Bixby on several occasions. Paul Bixby has been in my home, and in his place we have Tony Alexander, Esquire, a staff attorney with the Mail Abuse Prevention System Limited Liability Company, which is to say Paul's organization before there was, even before there was an organization, it was Paul. And in the past 6 months, I guess there's Tony, welcome. Thank you for coming.
You're very welcome.
Before we cut to Tony, I just want to get some grasp of the problem. I was actually looking, and I was at the Berkman Center earlier today, a student in this class happened to be there working on terminal. I won't tell you who she is. You may find this out. She was looking at her Hotmail inbox, and I had persuaded her to preserve her Hotmail inbox exactly as I discovered it when I found her. And you'll notice that all of these emails, November 11th, 12th, 13th, so these are all very recent emails. And as we look, starting with the wedges, there's an email from Jen Descalves. And that. So there's something from the Harvard Coop. I presume the Harvard Coop knows who the person is. The Coop may have money for you. But now we get to home loan at thebank.cx. Easy to close. Honest adult site on the net. Visit now. Your quick and easy money solution. Apply now. Guarantee lowest car pricing. Put more junk from Amazon. Adult over 21 years of age, business owner, operator, ad in an inkjet cartridge, money problems, top American. Oh my. So as you can see, this is basically an email full, an email box full of junk mail. Does this track your own personal experience using something like Hotmail to basically get a big file of this junk? Yeah. So I don't even need to actually show you these things. Relationship health things there. You may notice that a lot of them come from other countries, apparently, in the header, not from .com. And I guess here is click here for something, and you'll see it goes to a very complicated link below. Notice the link doesn't go to a domain name, it goes directly to my IP address, so it may be hard to find out exactly who's behind it. The removal mailbox in this particular one is removeplease.com. Odds are good that there is no box removed things to China.com, or if there is, there is no more. And it can make it very hard to do your email. And even if you choose to block sender for each one of these, you can rest assured that it's unlikely that even the same junk mailer will put in the same email address as the return address, including .jp at the end of the day. For the next one. God, judicial judgments, child support, I guess we're sort of blessed on a Harvard law server, we don't seem to get anything like this. And there are reasons for that as well. Let's skip some audio training course on how to collect judicial judgments, including against us. Fascinating. So you too can be a repo person. All right, so that is at least one demonstration of the problem. Now, there are multiple ways to try to deal with the problem. I guess Paul Bixby came up with one of them. Now, we last session described his system a little bit, but maybe as a lawyer working for him, suppose you were asked to submit an affidavit to a court telling the court how this thing works, what would you say?
I would say that the MAPS, Mail Abuse Prevention System, publishes a list of internet IP addresses that we and MAPS choose not to subscribe to and choose not to receive mail from. A lot of other people and other organizations cite that list also in a list of that they don't want to receive emails from because they trust our reputation, they trust our ability to make sure that these companies are definitely do or usually centered to unsolicited commercial emails. So we publish a list, and people choose to follow that list, just like restaurant reviews publish a restaurant review, people choose not to go to the restaurant.
And when you say people?
ISPs, subscribers, a lot of companies subscribe to the RBL list, and also use the RBL to look up, oh, they want to find out, should they box up this website, or they check our site.
How long is the list?
The list is quite long. But what
you won't find on our website
units. It increases and decreases on a daily basis because it's not a static list. It is not a list of if you send out spam on a given day, we go through our process and find out that you are excited, you are on the RBL and you should be, and you should put the RBL. We will then, we find that you've done an effort to take it off. I mean, to correct it, and we will take it off instantaneously. So I can't really say on any given day how big it is, but it can be in the thousands. But I'll tell you, it is not, it is a small portion of the spammers. I mean, there are, we can't capture all the spammers.
We just say it's effective.
It's not effective, no. It blocks a lot, but
the Roadway Justice has never done it.
No, it keeps us on our toes. I mean, every time we figure out a good way to block spam, they keep popping up. They're pretty insidious.
So are there questions about how this thing works? A list is kept. It seems to be a list by which the people at Maps themselves elect not to receive email from certain IP addresses. And do you know, can you always tell from what IP address an email is?
We can do some research to find out. A lot of times, the spammers will do a lot of effort to block where they're from or to make it not obvious where they send stuff from because they don't want, because they are trying to avoid it.
So they may pretend that they're somebody else.
Yeah, sometimes a spammer will send out something from a site for 1 or 2 days, and they'll send out 10 million emails in those 1 or 2 days, or sometimes a couple hours, and people will find them, and they'll get blocked, or their own ISP will get blocked. But, yes, spammers usually don't think who they are.
And the act of blocking is the act of instructing a mail server, a given mail server, don't accept any mail from this particular IP address destined for somebody who uses this server.
Again, we've done a lot of difficulties because a lot of people think that ISPs are pawns of Maps, that we're an organization, that we are shutting down all spammers. We're not God. All we can do is protect our own system. People can choose to follow our list. And administrators and abuse desks can receive mail any, all, or none of the people on the RBL list. So we don't block spam. We block spam to our own network, and the ISPs can choose not to receive spam. They can set up systems so they won't receive any information from the ISPs.
And what's the best way to measure the popularity of the list?
Well, up until recently, it's a free voluntary list. It's not been marketed in any way, shape, or form, but there are hundreds of subscribers that take our list as a whole, and then there's 20,000 at least people that look up the list and use it. So without any marketing, a lot of people in the industry find us direct to the list.
And do you actually partner with the list? You ship it out as a list to your subscribers, or the subscribers have to query you on a given
Subscribers can query us on a given address, or what they can do is they can subscribe, get our list. They can have access to our list, and they can transfer the whole list. The difficulty in that is that the list is not a static list. We don't want to say someone's on our list now that they will necessarily be on our list tomorrow. So people have the access our list, and we set it up so we encourage them so they have instant lookups so they can always know when people are added or deleted.
Because it looks like they'll stale otherwise. But yes. If they insist on getting a list that like they'll stale,
they can transfer the whole list over on a file, but we don't send out CD-ROMs. You can't mail for the thing. It's not being published. And another thing about this does not contain the names of any IP. I mean, it doesn't contain the names of Joe Spam.
It's just a list of numbers.
It's a list of numbers. So you can't look at the RBL and say, I want to know if that comes to spam list. If that comes on the RBL, you can't.
Now, is the list publicly available?
The list is publicly available, yes.
Where do you go to get it?
You would go to our website. And you would probably ask the technical people at our company exactly where to find that. And you wouldn't ask the lawyers. because we're too busy fighting off lawsuits. As you can see.
How to get into the RBL. How to get out of the RBL. How to use the RBL. Look up an entry. And that's RBL.
So if you knew the IP address, then you could plug it in.
So for example, if we knew the IP address here, I don't know how to ask Hotmail. I don't use Hotmail very often. How do I ask Hotmail for the clean headers? Is there some button I can press for that? Does anybody know? I mean, nobody in this room knows how to get Hotmail to give us all the headers.
The average person that uses, that accesses the RBL to find some information, is usually someone works in. It's a very tech savvy person at the company, often in someone's abuse desk. So it is not for the mom and pops that just know how to access their Hotmail.
Okay, so here's something. Here's an IP address to which you can click for more information. Would that be a good candidate, given what you're looking at right here? Would this be a good candidate for inclusion on the list? It's not the necessarily the IP address from which the spam originated, but it's the IP address for which you can click here and it will be sent in order to get your free debt analysis.
Well, you could go, you could try to plug that information.
But I mean, let's presume that somebody came to the RBL and said, look, it's on the presses, I just got some spam. And I want to see this number added to the RBL list. Is that a viable candidate?
Possibly. That could be the ISP. An ISP could have a dozen customers, and one of their customers could be one or all or more could be a spammer. And they might not necessarily be aware that that's a spammer, but we will probably find out if it's an ISP, we'll inform the ISP that they, one of their people are sending out spam.
Oh, look. So he's not on the list.
Not on the list.
Not yet, at least.
You better find out about it. Okay.
So, in fact, tell us more about this. Tell us about the process by which one earns a place on the RBL. How does it typically happen? Is there a crack team of investigators at RBL headquarters that sit and receive spam all day?
That's like I think so, yes. Yeah, there are. But most of it comes from people calling us and contacting us and saying that they have been receiving lots of spam from somebody. And they have contacted their ISP and they have made efforts to remedy the problem. And then they come to us and we ask them, we say, okay, well, you want this person to be on the RBL, well, show us that you've gone through all the steps, you contacted your ISP, you tried to get them to remedy the situation. And then we'll ask for the spam that you received. And at that point, one of our investigators will probably try to contact that site and then do further investigation. We're not just going to throw someone in the RBL without giving the ISP or the sender a chance to explain their side and hopefully correct the activity. Sometimes it's an ISP that doesn't know one's customer is doing this.
And anybody can report a problem to the RBL.
Yeah, there's no.
And how many investigators do you have?
Probably about, we've got a decent amount of volunteers, and then we've probably got about 10 to 15 full-time investigators.
10 to 15 full-time investigators, like, oh, man, I'm a spam investigator, and then I get up in the morning, I fight spam all day, I come home, honey, you won't believe what happened to the office.
I've heard some interesting phone calls from the people that often someone's. What they spend more of their time doing is not finding spam and not putting people in the RBL. It's more time getting people out of the RBL and investigating people that are in the RBL and finding out if they cleaned up their activity. Have they followed, have they agreed to the policies, to enforce their policies? A lot of times there will be ongoing lengthy negotiations with parties. At some point, they will be decided that they're corrigible and we're going to put them in. We're going to have to put in the RBL, that's the only thing that's going to stop. Our favorite thing to do is to educate someone and to have them, educated is the right word, it's not a little overwhelming, to inform a site of what's going on. Maybe that an ISP should have a better policy. Often an ISP has an acceptable use policy that they're not enforcing on their own customers. And we recommend, most ISPs enforce their own policies, probably not a lot of spam.
And if they fail to enforce enforce the policy. If the guy at the ISP tells your investigator, thanks so much for your report, don't call me, I'll call you when he ever calls back.
We'll probably look into it further. We might wait and see if there's more complaints. Someone in our group might try looking at someone's site, not looking at anything, not saying, yes, send me information, not doing anything like that, just going to that person's site. Often they'll send information to that just because they have their technology wired that way. In my mind, that is not us. You're not requesting information, and they're sending you unsolicited email that you didn't ask for, which is basically not spam.
So you could potentially blackhole the ISP itself.
We could blackhole an ISP. In fact, we've gotten a lot of, my job gets interesting because we blackhole ISPs for the actions of their carriers. They say it's our customer, it's not us. Well, we have adults respond to superior. It's my employee, not me, but it's an ISP's job to control and police its own network.
My worry is that there's plenty of spam that doesn't get caught by the filter. I don't know if it still is the case, but Hotmail at least subscribes to their emails that way.
Yes, it is. But one thing, we don't know what our subscribers take this information. We don't know what they do with it. We don't have any way of tracking what they do with people on all our NAR or not.
So there's no subscriber fee? It's all free?
It's free, but we're starting to have subscriptions. You can always look up to find an IFP and address, but we're starting to charge for it.
How do you currently balance your budget?
On the good graces of our founders.
Since all been big at .com.
As Paul Dixie, this is all out of pocket. A lot of people think it's horrible, but then I say, well, our founder believes in his passion. $1 million a year of his own money, pays all our salaries, pays us to go to Steve Harvard all the way from California out of his pocket. He doesn't generate money from this. We are trying to generate some just to cover a fraction of our costs, but this is not a money-making venture at all. This is a labor of love. This is something he does on top of an existing day job.
So if it's not entirely effective at identifying spam. There's plenty of spam that isn't on the list. That's one thing. If you are identified and added to the list, how effective would you say that is in preventing you then from getting email to destinations you'd like to send email to? Suppose Harvard Law School's server were added to the black hole list today. How many of our emails, as we send them outwards from there, looking to reach different destinations we found?
I don't know how to say if there's a set figure, if we develop a number, but it depends sometimes on who we put in. Sometimes it might block 8% of those connections to there, sometimes it's 40%. So it's often a very significant amount. I mean, it's enough that it'll have an economic impact.
You try to write to customer service at Amazon.com and it doesn't get there. Or you try to write to somebody at Hotmail.com and it doesn't get there, or it gets shunted aside to the bulk mail or other reading the store.
In which case, Amazon.com started losing all connectivity because of this. First of all, they wouldn't be in there. They wouldn't be a
supplier. Well, I don't think if Amazon is black hole. I mean, if I'm trying to write to Amazon, for example, and I'm black hole, it may well be that Amazon will never get the email because either they or their internet service provider subscribes to the RBL.
Mm-hmm. So some there's an ISP or two along the way that's in the RBL.
Yeah.
Yes, that's unfortunately one of the collateral effects. We really can't control it. We've tried to find ways to instant people off, but it's one of the collateral effects. It's to put pressure on. People have said the thing, what about my poor grandmother trying to send me an email? And she can't connect me because of your actions. And my response is, well,
because the grandmother has been black hole.
No, because of her ISP, maybe somewhere in her connection chain, one of the ISPs, one of the carriers is in the black hole. And at some point, someone along the line chooses to not receive email from one of those connections. But again, it's not, first publishing the list, I say is pursued about, we're currently about 3 or 4 lawsuits. So it's definitely a creative speech issue, and that's how we view it.
Gotcha. Are there any other questions on how this thing works? Yeah, Allison. Try your mic.
So if a person is back home, they'll just write back to them, and then I guess that's the first question. The second is, what is the procedure by which, like, the grandmother would try to just get her, try to facilitate her email going through? Is there a way that you can kind of mark off certain people on a server that might otherwise have a problem?
Again, the thing about it is we, in that scenario, probably maybe root out half because some ISP that the grandma uses for connection, or the person she's trying to connect to, is in the RBO. And then someone else among my students is not in this email. So you probably have to find out which connection, where it's being blocked. But to contact us directly, say I can't get through because we got blocked. We're not controlling it.
Well, wait, that's just a first order question. If I try to contact you directly because I've been black hole, will you get my email?
You kind of contact that?
Yeah.
Not sure. Probably not, no.
Yeah.
But guys, there's a number to call.
There's a number to call.
In fact, most of the people are abuse desk, but are RBL specialists and spend all day on the phone hearing angry calls.
The money depends on skill about the argument.
But these poor people hear all kinds of angry things. They're furious.
Grandmas and others who are finding available.
They're finding
available. Do they have a script to read or, usual kind of gene?
They have some guidelines, but I think after the 40th time, they don't need a script anymore. After being called all manner of profanities, and then we usually give instructions for how people are able to get off the RBL. It's usually the people who call us are the people who are actually put in the black hole. So, if you were put in the RBL, you would probably inform ahead of time. So it's no surprise.
Oh, you've got like an angry fan letter. Congratulations, we're spam control, and you've just been designated a letter.
Well, we would contact you first and say, there's a problem, you're sending out spam. We wouldn't say you're sending out spam, we'd say that we've got a lot of complaints on your network. And in which case, you'd say, well, I'm really sorry, but what can I do to change my policy? And we'd tell you what we recommend.
So
more likely than not, someone probably swear at us.
So to get added to the list, it takes a decision by exactly one investigator, whether full-time or deputized volunteer. Any of those is a power to go to the database, punch in an IP address, and boom, they're on the list?
No, what happens is there's a process called nomination, and only people in that are MAPS staff can process the nomination, and then it goes to the higher board, which is...
The what board?
The higher board.
Higher board.
And in case one of our founders will make that decision, whether someone is actually goes in the RBL or not.
So this is kind of like,
there's a lot of layers.
Moses Stuckmeyer has to bless each cookie. You're saying in this instance, nobody gets added on the list unless Paul or who else?
Dave Rand, another one of the founders and funders.
So there's two founders?
Yes.
Every single address added to that list has gone past Dave or Paul for approval?
Yes.
And that happens to this day?
That happens to this day, yes. And sometimes it might get blocked with 50 addresses at once, all the same transaction.
Right.
But yeah, there's a lot of people in the industry that want us to get mad at us for not putting enough people in the RBL. We call them, the Forge and Fishboard crowd. There's a lot of barriers.
What do you call the first crowd? Just for taxonomic purposes? The first crowd is what?
The people that call and complain about being black hole. I don't know what kind of thing. But officially, mostly call them angry callers.
So there's the angry callers, and then there's the torch and pitchfork crowd.
Yes.
And a lot of good old fashioned witch burners.
To say, put them all, to say yes, put them all in the RBL.
$5.
And so we make it very, we're only as good as our credibility. If we start putting people willy-nilly in those lists, we're going to lose credibility and no one pays our list. And so we're more cautious than the problem than some people would like us to be.
So does that mean that if you have a set of circumstances with ISP X, you don't know the identity of the ISP, hypothetically, and you find out how just terrible the uncooperative the ISP has been, repeated infringer, would it matter to you to pull aside the curtain and see the ISP is in fact not some dinky Canadian reseller, but in fact is AOL? Would that influence the decision of whether that ISP should get flat hold?
We might possibly look into the collateral damage and weigh a little heavier, but ultimately, no, not really. We might just say, well, we're going to think about this a little more. But in terms of the principles, no. Whether it's, you can send one piece of email, and that's enough to say you sent spam.
So in the culture of the RBL crew, is there a titan that sort of is legendary that you guys have taken on? What's the biggest target to put in the crosshairs?
What's the Republican National Party?
We put the Republicans in the RBL.
We did, not every single Republican in the country, but just they were sending heavy unsolicited mail to people.
I know it's just all Republicans. It was the Republican committee.
I got some. I'm definitely a Democrat.
And you complained.
Yeah.
You're on the call, stand up. Gotcha. Okay, so
again, it's not because they're Republicans. It's because they're sending unwanted mail to somebody didn't ask it for.
And so what do the Republicans do?
Probably complain, and then probably stop their policies, hopefully. I've been with Matt for about 3 months, so I know all the ins and outs of every complaint. And also, when someone is nominated, we gather what's called the EV file, the evidence file. So we have a whole series of scams and conversations or in dialogue between us and the ISP, so we have that information.
So the files are public or private?
The files are, they are publicly available if you have the information, if you know the URL, and if you know the IP address, you can find out.
So how hard would it be, just so that we get a sense of a typical evidence file, and I can call one up here today?
You would, I think if you knew an IP address that was on the RBL, and you want to check, it would then show the evidence file.
Gotcha.
And you don't happen to have it in that pocket list, so it might be better than the other one. No, I try to avoid memorizing this stuff. But the thing is, you can't find the you couldn't find the EV file for someone that isn't in the RBL. Because
these are investigations that weren't brought, I hate to use legal terminology, they sort of the indictment stage. You know, it's a closed investigation, went nowhere, or it's still pending. You don't get those EV files.
Right. They don't. And there's no way to get public access to those. So, because often it's you can imagine some of the claims are brought against us as defamation. So I've spent a lot of time looking exactly when we, you know, what's public, what's not, what we put to think just within our own network and what's public given out in the world.
Gotcha. Tell us a little bit about your competitors. Are you the only games in town?
We're one of the few. There's a lot of groups that do filtering systems. I think Brightmail is one. But one of their instances, I hired them or buy their services in Harvard, and they will sift all the mail, put in, you can set a filter however you want, and they will monitor things like that. Our thing is, ours can be used more to go to the source rather than. And I think if this was, if you're using this drug addiction, it might be going, our choke point might be farther down the line. But there's a decent, there's orbs, there it is. But I don't know, I like to think that we're the biggest and best at what we do.
And Have you all saw the patterns of dorms before?
People aren't, yes, people aren't really. I myself have not experienced dorms.
Now, I don't know if this, this is a story that I made in the whole class, I don't know. But I told the last session that Forbes is out there. This is the open relay behavior modification system. So that's, I think that's what it's called. Blowing whistle on insecure mail servers worldwide. I guess a lot of the way spam can take place is you just need a mailbox, a virtual mailbox, through which a virtual post person just gets the email into the stream of the internet, it gets it going. And for the longest time, most internet points of presence would accept emails or postings to the general internet from anybody. So you could go to www, or not www, but somewhere at harvard.edu and say, I've got some mail I'd like to get onto the internet. Will you take it for me? And Harvard would typically say, sure. It's not like it really costs us anymore. We're sitting here anyway. Great, give us the mail, and we'll take care of it for you. And that's known as an open relay. Anybody may use the relay in order to get mail into the stream of the system. This, of course, is a wonderful opportunity for spammers, because they can say, I've got 10 million pieces of mail. Would you mind if I give it to you to get on the internet? And an open relay would say, no problem, and then slowly get these emails into the internet at large. And if you're trying to trace it, it may be quite difficult to trace it beyond the point of the relay, because the relay would often just trust the person handing over the mail to be delivered as to that person's identity. So the person would say, yes, I'm Shrub at daffyduck.com, and I've got 10 million emails to go. And Harvard would say, great, give it to us, and away they would go. So if you're trying to stop it, you might be dead-ended going beyond the relay. So Forbes says, we've got to start closing these relays. We've got to see to it that you can't send mail through Harvard unless or now you're connected to Harvard. And in fact, not too long ago, the law server closed its relay. That's why when you dial up to your Harvard Law account from outside the Harvard network, you first have to check mail before you're allowed to send mail. That's a way of asserting by the act of checking that shows that you actually have an account on the server, and only then are you allowed to send mail onto the internet at large. So Forbes is, as I understand it, actually much more mechanical than what we've heard about here. Excuse me, the RDL. The RDL ultimately is a very human intensive process. It seems like in the first half of a Law and Order episode, Lenny Briscoe goes out and, you know, shakes down people on the street to figure out what the real scoop is. Forbes is sort of a meat processing plant. And what does it do? It sends out test messages using servers. So it walks up to Harvard and says, hi, I've got a message. I'm Forbes. And if Harvard accepts the message and posts it into the internet mail and comes back to Forbes, or sends a message themselves to Harvard, boom, that must mean that Harvard has an open relay and Harvard's in big trouble. Forbes sends these test messages just to see if they'll be accepted. And if they are, through an entirely automated process, you'll get an email alerting you that you're about to be blacklisted by Forbes. And here's why it says, what is Oracle? It's the database. I just found Oracle's test message in my admin mailbox, et cetera, et cetera. And, yeah, go ahead.
Matt said something that's pretty much synonymous with that. I'm not going to say it's exactly the same thing. Our policies, their administration is going to be different. We have a thing called the RSS. I'm not sure if that's on the list.
Yeah, I think that's on your homepage.
It's on our homepage. I don't think it was on the yes, and reading.
Right.
It's called the Relay Spam Stop List. And I just had some interaction with it myself to had to answer a lawsuit about it. But it's a very mechanical process. And often, the open relay is not, there's nothing voluntary about it. The open relay has a system that's often poor technology, it's old, it's inefficient, and people are able to hack into it on some level and send off out. Hack it is like the appropriate word, but they're able to get into this and send out stuff that people are unaware of. So if we find out that there's one person that's on the that's been sending out stuff from over relay, we'll just run a test. We'll try sending something through, and if it goes through, we'll put it in the RSS. It's completely different than the RDL in terms of of our process.
And the reason you keep them as sort of separate products, if I may use the word, is so that people can easily subscribe to one but not the other, depending, ISPs that is, depending on how top of line they want to take against email or what methods they want to approve of.
I would say more because they're just such different creatures. The whole process of the RML is very subjective. It's not just a case of you send one email, it's what's your attitude about email? Are you like, it's almost like probation. We have a probation part of the RBL. So
people can be on probation.
Yes.
And so they're walking the same line. And if the word comes back to their probation officer that they've recidivized, and they're suddenly senseless.
Yeah, so it's much more subjective. And it's also much more problematic for us because we say someone is sending out spam. Well, it's a little open to subjectivity. We say you got an open relay, well, it's not too questionable. We say you run it through, and no one's going to sue us saying, no one's going to sue us about the RSS. They'll sue us about the RBL all the time.
It's funny, because at this time last year, when Paul visited, there wasn't an RSS yet, and I told him the story of Orbs, because just that morning, the Berkeley Center server had been blacklisted by Orbs, because it's an open relay. We had scrambled at 6 a.m. to try to satisfy the robot of Orbs that we had dealt with the problem, so we sent another test email, and if it didn't get to itself, it would then take us out of the Orbs black hole list. And I told that story to Paul, and he said, yeah, well, as far as I'm concerned, those sending up the test emails is themselves spam. So there was a natural follow-up question. I said, Paul, did you black hole them? And he said, yes, he black holed Orbs. And I said, what did they do? He said, they black holed us. Now, I don't know if things have cooled off in the years since then, but
one of the differences.
Is this news to you, or have you never heard this story before?
It's news, but it's not surprising. One of the issues in MAPS, and pretty much everyone on MAPS has an opinion. Has lots of opinions, and that's why they're working on it. It's an activist group. There's no stock options here.
Not even any trademarks.
We'll stop suing us. We might do that. So that's on my list. But the difference is that Orbs is another organization, and sometimes we have differences with them about whether or not their standards are the same as ours, and our standard vice versa. So. I can't really comment exactly if I agree 100%, but I'd say, the same intent's good.
Do you think, suppose we're asked on direct examination, as somebody's laying out, right, this is the same. Does the mail abuse prevention system, which is the same as the open black hole does, do they deserve the right to put anybody on the list for any reason?
For any reason.
You just don't like them. Would that be your right to list them simply for not liking them? Having nothing to do with whether or not the entity says spam.
I would say it's our right. I'm not speaking for MAPS because it's a problem, but I would say it's definitely our right to refuse email from anyone we choose to refuse email from and to publish a list that says we choose to refuse email from these people. We have that right. If we put it on the RBL, published for subscribers, we say the reason why they're on, that'll be difficult. One thing we do at MAPS is we do not worry about content of messages. A lot of people said we should. A lot of people said we should carve out a niche for political speech. But we
follow it. Probably never got
to do it. But if we've already been called censors by enough people, and so we can get into content where it's too much of a Pandora's box. So it's pretty much the issue is, are you sending out unwanted mail to people who didn't want to ask for it? If someone asked for it and didn't like what they got, well, that's not our problem. If someone gets a scam in the mail and it's a scam but they asked for it, well, sorry, but it's not our issue.
Gotcha. So I want to return some of this stuff, but first I just want to get a little more interaction going. Is Mark any journey here? Mark any? Yeah. meetings. Is Daniel Haley here?
Yeah.
Daniel Haley. So David Post's article of Black Holes and Decentralized Lawmaking in Cyberspace, mercifully brief article on our meetings. He says, that's just an example of, and I quote, an informal system of decentralized consensus-based social control in shaping human social behavior. Does that seem an accurate characterization to you?
Yes, but it immediately raises the question that I actually wanted to ask at some point.
I'm glad to get you that.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate that. My question was, and I think I know the answer, but I want to hear you say it. In everything you say, implicit is the assumption that spam is bad and that you have the authority to take down a spammer. You have the authority to interfere with, in many cases, it's their business, it's their lifeblood, it's how they're making money. You have the authority to insert yourself in between a spammer and their income. And I come from the perspective of someone who hates to get spam, but I think the quote that Professor Zittrain just read prompts the question. It is decentralized, it is seeking to shape social behaviors. But it's also seeking to, in a large sense, to shape business behaviors, to put restrictions on commerce, to do a whole lot of things informally in a decentralized manner. But I ask you to react to that and tell me from where comes the authority to do that.
It's not our goal to block speech. I'm not going to say what I'm saying. You can't say what you want to say, but what I'm saying is you can't send your message to me through my system at my system's expense, at my non-expense. And I don't have to necessarily receive it from you. I don't have to open up my system to have you transmit your message to me. And that's a large part of what we don't block. Messages. We allow people to not receive messages. We allow them to choose to not receive messages from people. To the effect that we're involved in other people's business. I mean, again, I have to say from a legal viewpoint, from a legal standpoint, you're not set in the middle of an ISP someone sending because they choose to use our list, they choose to use information, just like can the makers of the Grinch movies sue Roger Ebert? Possibly. He's affecting their business. He's definitely insinuating himself into the business of movies, and he's having strong opinion. He'll say he shouldn't do so. But people just choose. But unless we're going to say there's something wrong with what he does, I don't think we can say it's wrong with what he does. I think all communication should be consensual. Now, at least along the internet, that was one of the founding, that's one of the policies. The internet is something that he helped create. One of Paul's things he did. Is that what he's playing?
Oh, yeah.
Did you talk to who Paul is and why so famous?
Well, they told him he's sort of one of the wizards who made the internet. And I imagine he has something to do with the NS.
One thing that Paul did just for background, he, and I'm not very technical, so I'm going to botch this. But he invented a technology so you could send email to name domains, to names, rather than just necessarily IP address. So, which really makes the internet unreliable. So he really feels this is something he helped create. He doesn't want to see it just ruined by spam. And part of it is that spam is just taking up, it's kind of taking up the internet. And there are a lot of laws on this. And it's a consent, the whole internet's founded by a consensual process. So if people decide what rules they want to use, it falls
that, but I mentioned it, just saying we don't want to, you know, these people because we don't like the way we do business. If you agree with us, fine. If you don't eat our lips.
So, Dan, we'll just come at you again. You agree then that these post characterization, the non-existent centralized, this is basically a norm creation process? This is about norms?
Well, yeah, especially given, I don't remember what the percentage was of spam that the system likes. It was low. So, but assuming that this is accepted, that lists like this are accepted, that others can start up these sort of lists, that it's a gradual building process, and I assume that the end result is to stop spam, then, yeah, of course, it's like adding more builder.
But this is basically just a form of shunning. That's what Post says. I'm just trying to see if you agree. It's basically just a way for people to shun people they don't like.
Well, I guess that's true, except that an issue I take with what was just said is that I think the explanation just given minimizes the impact. It's not just subscribers to lists shunning people that they don't want to communicate with. There's a ripple effect. There's obviously you get put on the Berkman Center gets put on Oracle's list. You scramble at 6 a.m. because there's a real impact to that. It's not just somebody out there can't hear you. It's a lot of people out there can't hear you. And if you're a commercial venture, it's the people that you need to hear you can't hear you. I'm making this argument, by the way, from a perspective of just devil's advocate because apparently.
That's fine. What's your IP address?
See, this is the point. Am I answering a question or am I circling it?
Jen Steen, is he answering my question? Jen here? What do you think? Jen is the mic up.
I'm sorry, can you? I wasn't really.
Oh, no. I don't want to make him go through it all again. All right, so just somebody else. Jeff Rosenfeld, how about you? Where's Jeff Rosenfeld?
Over here.
Oh, there you are. Is he answering a question?
Is he answering my question?
He doesn't have a question. I thought it was the old one. We've gotten rusty, haven't we? It's like first year is just a fog years away. Come on, get into it a little bit. Tell me, is this just shunning? Come on, I mean, David Post is telling us that it's basically, if you don't like the way somebody behaves, they basically act like a jackass, you have the right to turn your back on them. Have nothing to do with them. Well, is there no difference, is it?
This is what worries me, is that the subscription that ISPs have for this list seems to be something on the equivalent of if the post office went through my mail and took out letters from people that they didn't like. And I probably get more junk postal mail than I get junk email. But there might be something in there that I might want to see. And I'm a bit worried about having the post office select which mail I should receive. And I'm similarly worried about my ISP subscribing to this list and selecting people that it doesn't like for whatever reason.
So let's pick that up a little bit. This is interesting. Do we think that there would be, I don't know if you've gone through con law, do you feel if there were a law that said the discretion of the Postmaster General, mail deemed to be spammy, instead of being favored with a discounted rate, as it currently is, will be not delivered? Is there a constitutional problem with that? Are you in common?
I'm in common.
That's a survey course problem again. Sarah Salovich.
There would be a problem because the First Amendment applies against a government entity. And I think that there wouldn't be necessarily legitimacy with giving the post office discretion.
I had a classmate actually at law school on every letter he used to put a little sticker that said, attention, postmaster, this package may contain inciting or lascivious materials, but it's against the law for you to open it. He's a litigator in LA. You were saying?
So, I don't know if I can follow. basically that it acts as a governmental body while being private, so the First Amendment doesn't apply. And I think that what winds up happening as a result of that is that you allow a body that is not legitimate or regulated to have discretion over what kind of materials people receive. And I don't think it's based on individual choice, because if 40% of ISPs are actually using the service, it means that the ISPs have made, effectively made the choice for people who subscribe to them.
All right, so let me ask a hypothetical. Before I do, I just want to assure Jeff, there's actually a little bit of a case on point. I think it's Roman, the first postmaster general, in which, as part of our anti-communist phase, the United States had a law that said, if you tell the postmaster general that you don't want to receive mail from somebody, you are allowed to have it stopped. And it's a Byzantine process involving the postmaster general, the attorney general, by which if somebody spams you or sends you mail after you said, I don't want your mail, then they get into big trouble. And the idea was that then lists of communist mailers can be made available. People can then fill out the list, send it to the post office, and say, no communist mail for me, thanks very much. And there, the Supreme Court held sort of one bite of the apple theory that said you're allowed to send somebody unsolicited mail once. And if they don't like it, then it is constitutional to create a process by which you can instruct the Postmaster General not to deliver it. But a preemptive strike, asking the Postmaster General not to allow mail from somebody who has yet to mail you, would be unconstitutional. Bottom line, the dicta of this case, to draw. But now, Sarah, let me just come back to you with a hypo in which mail truck comes by each day, delivers the U.S. mail to mailboxes down the street. But there's a new community association, Save the Trees While Saving Your Eyes. And what they'll do is, if you accede to this, they will come to your mailbox and sift through it before you have a chance to check it to become home from school. And they'll get rid of stuff deemed to be on their bad list. And their bad list is defined as, you know, catalogs, bulk mail, stuff like that, stuff that, you know, you read the criteria and you're comfortable you wouldn't want to see. And you then sign on to that service. You think that service runs into the problem that Jeff's hypothetical run into?
No, unfortunately, I don't think it would, but I think, I guess on a policy level, I wish that it would, because I think if you run into problems of censorship and freedom of information, I think that effectively you're contracting out your First Amendment rights.
So if you're working in an LA law firm, as you may next year, and even some associates, oddly, as secretaries, right? It's a very odd phenomenon to have somebody who's like answering your phone and sister friends calling, wondering. But, you know, a secretary runs out of things to do, and he filters your mail for you, right? He opens up some stuff, puts it in front of you, and deep six is the stuff you don't want. Is that something that should be against public policy? A non-delegable duty to read your own mail?
Well, it's different because, as Jen has just pointed out, they're your agent. And I think that on an individualized level, it's less problematic than when you have a service providing this choice to the general public.
Gotcha. Now, typically, people can't subscribe to the RBL on an individual level, right? They have to have, typically, their server administrator. If it's AOL, the guy that runs AOL servers, if it's Harvard, Jane Sulkin over at AOL,
hey,
wants
to
do it all over.
That is a pretty expensive paper product. Again, this is not my specific area, but they have to have some pretty high-end technology. It's pretty expensive stuff. They have to almost have their own server.
So it's not geared for individuals so much as it is for ISPs who can decide on behalf of all of their subscribers. But of course, they can make their selling point. Subscribe to us, and you'll get this benefit of email filtering. Use somebody else, and you won't. That's no trouble to you, Sarah?
Yes. Yes.
And you say that conceding that this is basically just shunning. This is just norms. It's just shunning accomplished by proxy.
I think that my fear is sort of greater, is that when your rights are contracted, when you contract out your rights to receive information, that the public debate isn't fostered, and you may effectively be creating a society where information is so filtered. I don't think we should function in a society where people can decide to be totally unaware.
Right.
I don't think it's good for government, I don't think it's good for
policy. So, if we want to use the scale approach. I'm just talking as a policy matter now. We'll get into the doctrinal battles that you've gotten into so much in a moment. But if this is a matter of policy, you thought that this was one way to effectively, or as effectively as possible, go after unsolicited email, how would you then improve upon the process? Is there any way to salvage it from your point of view so that you actually feel comfortable with it, or is the whole approach somehow salvaging?
I think the approach is really similar. I mean, I think it's similar to a governmental approach to filtering content. I would be more comfortable with regulations on people, with federal regulations on spammers.
So you'd be more comfortable with formal government regulation making it illegal to send spam to anyone in the United States territories?
I probably wouldn't go that would not be the direction that I would go if I did this conference.
So what would it be? You'd have to pay extra of your taxes if you do it? What would it be?
I think that there could be, and I haven't really thought this totally through, but I think that there could be a very similar to the Brown v. Postmaster General case, where if you, I think that there could be some sort of regulations placed on industry businesses where if you had requested that you no longer receive mail from a certain entity and you do, then there could be fines or whatever, some sort of.
But they always get one bite of the apple. That doesn't help this situation, does it? All of these, as far as we can tell, are first bites of the apple. The idea, I mean, already in Hotmail, if I click on something and I say I don't like it, I can click on block sender there. They've implemented technically no more bites of the apple for this sender. I just click on the block sender button.
I'm not talking about necessarily the sender itself. I suppose I'm talking about the corporation or the product that's being sold or whatever information
is. No more blue green algae.
Yeah, no more weight loss diet pills.
From anybody. Any weight loss diet pill manufacturer cannot send me junk mail anymore.
I think it would be too hard to implement it in that way, but I'm guessing that there's a limited number of companies that produce these weight loss diet pills. And I think it also sort of interrelates to sort of database privacy and what they, we're going to go farther than I suppose you want to go, but I think there's definitely ways of limiting the amount of information that's provided.
Well, I do want to at least have a spend a minute or two more getting out a sense of what the alternatives are out there. What are the alternatives? We have our panelists. Somebody just, before I go to the panel. Yeah, go ahead.
I haven't thought this is really much either, so I'm very quickly, but what if you had a law, a federal law that's interactive? If you're sending out spam, you just have to have a little star. Like, it's not a personal email.
The spam star.
Yeah, so you don't have to, you can really glance at your email box and quickly delete things.
Or just tell the email box, if anything comes in with a star, trash it.
Okay, now we're just there as a problem.
I didn't know it was a problem. It's just seeing like a feature, right?
You don't want people blocking access to things that's not exposing themselves to.
Yeah.
Well, one policy option is to have no regulations on spam. It seems to me that we were talking about baseline principles of First Amendment law, and it seems to me that one of the principles is that individuals can do annoying speech in ways that cost society. You can stand in the sidewalk or in the public square or whatever and irritate people with reprehensible ideas. If you gather a big enough crowd, the police and public cost may come and keep order. And this is all in a public.
So we should celebrate the sandbox.
Yes. Why not? It is. You can go delete, gone. It takes 30 seconds. And there you go. What's the big deal? And the alternative is muzzling a lot of people and taking away what I believe is, look, there's a lot of commercial speech. It's a pain. I agree with that. But guess what? There is also a powerful interest in political speech or other voices. Being able to speak. Why don't I have that?
Yeah, go ahead.
And jump in the frame. Is freedom of speech sending out 10 million messages 100 times a day, 24 hours a day, is that speech or is that something different than First Amendment speech?
Sounds like free speech to me. It sounds like the epitome of free speech.
Okay, I couldn't tell. I mean, I heard you then inveighing against any attempt by those bureaucrats in Washington to come after this process. But do you have any problem with what Max is doing?
I think it's even worse, because when you have the government trying to regulate speech, we have the First Amendment, which requires hatred and life harm. You can have a demonstration in a public square, but you can't do it in the middle of the road to tie a traffic.
Yeah.
And these are decisions that in the courts, they draw careful lines. Here we have what I would say are not decentralized consensus decision makers, but actually there's one or two outfits that do this, are autonomous, unregulated dictators who are making decisions for everyone.
We've also called Groucher the Nazis. My girlfriend works for an internet marketing company, said a lot of bad things.
Well, I think this is the American Apple and James Carville.
Gotcha. So, one more quick hypo just to test our common law doctrine here. Suppose one of the new features on your Beamer is a GPS system right at the dashboard that tells you where traffic is and routes you, like Smart Traveler, you know, why don't you go this way to work today, because this is how you get there fastest. Don't take the Golden Bridge, that kind of thing. But built into it isn't just here's where the traffic is, it's here where the protests are. Suppose it's a Seattle kind of thing. If you want to avoid today's protests, go this way. You can shun those protests. Is that service run by victims?
I think it's a different matter, because it's the whole purpose of email is communication, to receive ideas and to receive information.
But the whole purpose of walking around public spaces is to get to wherever you're going.
You don't drive your car in order to receive information. You drive to get somewhere. And so something that facilitates that is fine. It is now you probably don't use your email to get Viagra pills either, most of the time, but right? However, I think the relationship between spam, which conveys an idea or information, and what you use email for is very much very
important. Nobody uses their email to get this, right? Who uses their email to get this crap?
It's one of the costs of living in a free society, sir.
Alessia!
I'm sorry. Bullshit. This is not a free society. This is garbage. I mean, you're so concerned. I don't understand why we can't have an opt out. I guess I'm seeing your point, Sarah, and I guess if there were an opt out at an ISP level when I sign up from ISP, I could say, you know, you could be happy and get your spam, and the rest of us could.
In fact, you can forward your spam automatically.
Right. So, I guess is that an option, or what?
It's technically not feasible. It's not feasible right now. If we had the technology, we probably would like to do so. It's in the spirit of what we'd like to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there any legal argument that the email addresses aren't public property in the same sense your P.O. box or your telephone number is? I mean, it seems to draw more of an analogy of saying, you know, having a telemarketer coming to your house directly, there's some private property issue that you can use to justify that sort of screening.
You're a lawyer.
Well, that's one of the arguments, actually. If you go to the site and did the reading, the lecture,
you might have a career in teaching.
Yeah. One of the things is, if you're an ISP and the spam is sent through your ISP to all your customers, it's a big cost to the ISP. It is not just freedom of speech. It is me sending a message to your, let's say, fax machine, causing tying up your fax machine system, cost using your paper, your printer. It's averaged about 20% of most people's bills, or the cost of the internet, comes from spam. So you are paying to receive spam. This is not junk mail that the host, the person putting in the post office, is paying the postage on. You're paying
your ISP is paying, your ISP is charging you to receive all the spam. And it ties up the ISP's systems. So it is not free to the recipient, and but it's free to the sender.
I want to get our panel into it a little bit. Aaron?
I just feel like we're missing, we're all excited about the First Amendment here, but we're forgetting about part of the First Amendment, which is freedom of association. And I think there's a real arguable right of people who want to make these personal points, they don't want to see junk email to be able to associate other person by subscribing to real time.
There's a whole thread of cases about the freedom to shun. We're going to stick with the shun thing. I want to have my parade and nobody else can march with me.
And now, you know, regardless of whether you like this decision or not, that's as viable as free speech precedent of the First Amendment. So you can't just make a First Amendment argument that, you know, that something about real time like a whole is problematic. It is, in fact, an expression of First Amendment values for private citizens or private ISPs to associate around the point that they don't want to get shown.
Yeah. Now, I want to make sure we leave time for the panel case study, too. But back here, for a comment or a question or something.
I don't think the First Amendment is a particularly good analogy, especially if we're talking about you know, central access to information or forming of one's consciousness. I mean, the case of the commercial speech doctrine flatly said that stuff would probably fail if the state did. I mean, I don't think this violates the First Amendment or a state act, because all the cases of the commercial speech doctrine that argued they were going to be protected had to do with something more than just the sale of a good, right? Because the sale of a good represented something more, so it was about gambling in Puerto Rico, or it was about something regarding nationalized versus localized industries and things like this that affected sort of real communities. And it was about debates that had sort of turned political. So I haven't discovered that yet myself when I look at these messages, like what other sort of proxy content do they hold besides a raw representation of capital?
So as a policy question, then, which would you prefer, a successful MAPS RBL or a successful federal law of that? That's very basically indifferent.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I mean, your comment earlier said that there's crisp line drawing done by courts, and I'm not sure why a court institution is any better at drawing crisp lines than a successful non-governmental organization. I don't really know. I see them as sort of fungible. I understand what you're using.
Yeah. So why don't we get into the case study a little bit right now? The three of you had, Eric, who wants to tell us about it? Tell us your story. I guess we have a university and we have an enterprising student, Lauren Rothenberg. Lauren, what did you do?
Our university is a university that helps students set up commercial ventures and uses their ecosystem specifically for the purpose of learning and helping their ventures. So my business is a student movement company that does quite well by spamming, and we've got a lot of business across the country through spamming. And so we are a good student business that helps students out, gives students a percentage of the profits, and it's very well received across the country. So we don't really see any problems with this kind of thing.
All right, so you're a student at the university, and you're sending out plenty of spam. And Erin is giving advice to her colleague. You send out spam, it works for you. Erin, how do you fit into this?
I'm an internet service provider systems administrator, and after Lauren's business, eMover contracted to spam a lot to advertise eMover's website. A lot of my clients complained about their getting lots of spam, so I signed up to subscribe to the Black Hole list and told them about the Uber spam. And so they flagged the web server for being a support service to spam.
Now, this is something that could potentially happen, right? If the university were not helpful to you in preventing Lauren from sending spam, if somebody like Aaron complains, you might call Black Hole University server.
We might Black Hole the server. We might Black Hole the originator of spam. We Black Hole people that send spam, originate spam, and also
can our data be scanned friendly and or spam enabling? After an ISP, if you allow it all to go out, you can submit it to the RPL.
My understanding when I contacted the RPL was that the .com university that Lauren goes to, their web server supports a website that is the Uber's website, and the spam that is sent out to my clients advertised going to this website. So the spam itself came from the university, but that they operate today. It's the university web server that has the
spam. And as we discussed before, if a site, a website is advertised in a spam email, that might make it fair game for being black hole, even though that site wasn't the source of the spam, right? That can still be fair game?
Yes, it could.
Okay. So, and Darren, I think if you are running a university thing that hosts this site.
Yes, I am. Our university is based on helping young student entrepreneurs create e-businesses. And part of the educational experience is sort of learning along the way and falling flat on your face. And so if they want to send spam and give me an ad, then don't apply their product. That's the last thing they think they should learn. I mean, just preventing them from doing something, a business model.
So what's the problem then, right? Then you all learn us together.
Well, the problem is some of our students who aren't doing that are going to get nailed there. And so they're not spamming, but since we're getting shut down, we have to weigh the value of our education versus the needs of our students to get stuff out.
So let's just play out then. I presume, have the conversation. The email offers you the reason why they don't want to take down their site. Is that compelling to you?
So you're saying they're sending out spam, and you know it, and you're fine with that?
Well, I mean, one of the things is a lot of this business in particular is sending out spam, but a lot of people are liking it. It's actually being effective.
Is the business sending out spam to people who have asked for it? It's sending out messages to people who have asked for it.
Well, we don't try to meddle with what they're doing, but from what I understand, they are targeting certain communities that are more likely to respond to their spam if they're on the request in spam. So they're not spamming everybody on Hotmail, they're spamming certain demographics.
So they're only sending unwanted email to some people that don't want to receive the email.
But some people who they are spamming and that do want it because they are then purchasing the product. And so,
how many of the people that don't want this complaint to be matched?
Oh, that's
hypothetically.
Yes, that's what you've got left for.
Yeah, I guess some people don't like it.
So you're sending out. Okay, so assuming I've gotten some complaints and I've got an ad, so you're not willing to shut this down. You're not willing to stop this one sort of person from sending out this email. Would you be willing to have this person modify their policy and so they only send out emails to people who have requested this?
Well, part of the problem is we feel that would be interfering with the educational development of our students and their business models on their own. And so if you want a black hole, just that, maybe that's a lesson they need to learn, but we don't feel it's appropriate to sort of interfere with their project and tell them what to write. Just like if we were a journalism school, we really didn't want to tell our students not to write certain articles because some people didn't like what they're writing.
But you choose to allow them to send out messages to people that you know for a fact have not asked for them.
Yeah.
You might get the RBL. Yes.
Might be.
Well, I might nominate you for the RBL, in which case it might go up to our founders.
And then they have sort of prosecutorial discretion as to whether to actually put it in.
Yes, and then...
Am I able to sort of talk to those founders and sort of say, look...
You talk to me, and then we make... and then you sort of make your pitch. But you probably have to convince me why I think you're going to change what you're doing before I choose to accept the email from your server.
And is there a way to sort of just say, well, you're going to target the business itself and not me, since, you know, you can figure out, well, I'll tell you they're doing it, but the rest of our students didn't do anything?
We might just somehow try to shut down just that one person. Do you have a lot of other businesses that are doing similar things from your site?
Not right now, but, you know, they might follow up on the success of this one and do it. We don't know anymore.
If we shut down this one, or you can another one pop up, what will you do then?
Well, we would just hope that you would deal with them on that road too and leave us out of it.
It becomes a persistent problem and you seem to keep doing this. We might shut you down. We probably first try to shut down the one first. Our goal would not be to shut it down. Our goal is to have you clean your act and make the internet a better place for everyone.
All right, so I want to reserve 5 minutes at the end of the class for feedback. So in the 7 minutes we have left, maybe you can fill us in a little bit on some of the doctrinal things, right? You've been sued 4 times, plenty of other threats. I assume Paul has an unlisted number.
We've been sued, we received a stack this high of junk facts without any addresses on them saying you guys are brown shirt Nazis, stop what you're doing.
Yeah.
Say it again, which is kind of basically the intent of killing our fax machines.
So, there's an unsolicited fax law.
There is?
Yes, I've got a college in Cambridge.
I've got a stack under my drawer and at parties that day.
One of the best litigious things in my life. They actually sent a lawyer to check it, too. I better get class before I come. Does anybody on the panel want to hypothesize? Give us a cause of action. This is now bearing on the logistic question, which is important to do tomorrow. But give me a cause of action. If you want to go after Maps, what are you going to, what's your best claim?
Well, I would say that if I was sending, if I got black holes and it had nothing to do with spamming for other reasons, it was an important sort of business email or something, and you know, I lost a contract because it would be like a tort, you know, like it's...
It'd be like a tort,
yeah.
Account two, players engaged in like a tort.
And if it gets defended, I would have like, you know, I would have a harm that I could probably calculate, and they... they would have caused that harm, and...
like six, now five cases to negative, that's not negative. All right, so did anybody get here for like a tort?
Well, I'd say none of these, we haven't had the case that's been finally adjudicated. We've had several cases.
What seems to be popular, though?
Usually tortious interference with business relationship, tortious interference with contract, defamation. Some people have accused us of antitrust activities. Some people have accused our founders of doing this to benefit industries that he also is involved with. Those are some of the
fun. So aside from the antitrust, it sounds like this is primarily common law stuff. State court, you're interfering with our contractual relations or with our business relationships, etc. What kind of cases do they cite? What are the kinds of things deemed analogous?
Well, so far, you know, all the cases that they only go through a discovery process. We just recently had a case where they tried to sue us in New Hampshire, and we being a California company did not want to chill out to New Hampshire or again for depositions. So we filed a motion for declaratory relief in California. There's this California statutory law saying that common carriers, it is illegal to send spam. Send unsolicited messages to ISPs, basically. And there's been an issue of whether or not Maps itself can claim itself as an ISP. So it's still under some debate. In fact, it's under, not right now, it's being decided, well, not as we speak, but it'll be decided pretty soon in a subsequent hearing. So one of the things Maps is, one of our goals is, we actually like to be high-owned, but it's our founders sort of want to be sued for the right cases so we can establish.
Yes, why is that a good plan in the world? The thing is, schools.
No, but at one point our site did say how to sue Maps. No, it's not how it's used.
Okay, that's what I was trying to ask him actually.
Yes.
So he's idiosyncratic, but he's.
No, he's kind of. People say we're vigilant, but we would like case law on point. We'd like her to be some successful case law. These issues have to go to final adjudication. I mean, whether or not on some TRO hearing it goes our way or not, it's not going to settle the issue of is spam legal or not illegal.
Gotcha. And are you familiar with packet level RBI? Is that what that was?
I don't think it's on the spot, because that'd be around the technical.
I'm not doing anything. Do you see it?
There are some people that hate spam, at least as much as Paul does. They're delighted at the service he provides. And they say, it's one thing for us to refuse email coming from the IP addresses of those who cause, hate, or that spam. But we can do more. We can do better. We can configure our routers. Remember how a packet gets through that cloud. It's a series of routers that agree to pass packets laterally back and forth. And they do so as often as not because it's the nice thing to do, not because they're getting paid to do it. And even so, they can choose what packets to carry and what not, right? So you get a packet. It has an internet protocol address in the from field. You know where it's coming from. So that when somebody wants to answer the packet, suppose the packet is part of a request for a given web page, you have to know where it's in the web page. If that IP address is on the RDL, then you can simply refuse to pass the packet. It's as if your router doesn't exist, was taken out, and the packet will not pass through it. And in the review session, which was quite helpful, we showed a little bit. There's this thing called traceroute, which shows you how a packet gets from one thing to another. So to get from here to bix.com, we start on the Northwest campus, then we go to the core, to FAS. We leave FAS, and we start looking for other ways to get to bix.com. There's a backbone, ATT.net in the 12s. Here we are, our packet is wending its way, it's in its Vario. Now it's going through Vario, and it looks to me like, not unsurprisingly, Paul doesn't like unsolicited packets either. Oh, no, here we go. And it eventually made its way in 20 hops over to bix.com. Now, any one of those hops in the middle could have decided to RDL us or ask the RDL if we are on it, and if we are, the packet doesn't go. Now you try to find another route. Might take a little longer. I mean, the topology isn't such that only one link in the chain is broken. That's the end of the story. But you can start to imagine then that if this gets implemented at the packet level, your web surfing, which involves packets, if you are black hole, will start to go slowly. You're not sending email to anybody. You're just surfing the web. But it takes longer than it does your next door neighbor to get to your websites, to get to CNN.com, because some of the people in the middle are refusing to carry your packets. And indeed, CNN.com might choose not to accept web requests from somebody on the RDL. And you can see like how Hal's drawers getting pulled out in 2001. Your web surfing experience starts to degrade materially the more people who start implementing the RDL packet level. Now, I don't know, does that seem in line with what the RDL is all about? Or are you doing, is this story
that you're doing? Just if you want to. No. But the idea of someone just web surfing, not sending any messages,
right?
That sounds a little problematic.
But it's also a shunning sanction, right? It's like, not only do I want email from you, I don't want anything from you. You want to engage in spamming? No web pages for you.
But again, that has probably your ISP's choosing, and I'm not sure I technically exactly what level they're saying. It's not even going to receive any sort of trace messages or any kind of electronic impulse.
Yeah, those routers just don't pass packets for people on the bad list.
Well, I don't know how much web surfing these. A lot of people who send out spam, it's not someone like, I send a chain letter. I'm sorry I'm so annoying to send these annoying chain letters. I'm sending you 10 million things to buy my Viagra. I'm probably not spending a lot of time surfing. I don't know. To me, that's a reasonable cost for those spam.
But it could certainly raise the price on this fellow here. It's one thing if some of his students' email starts bouncing, it's another if they basically came down the web. So if your goal is to bring him into line, you know, you might be unhappy for everybody that has to be RDL because they appear to be recalcitrant. But that can, I guess, the inverse of sweetening the pot.
Well, now he's an ISP that's concerned about one of his customers at the expense of how many other customers. and you're choosing to defend that activity of one customer.
But this is the right thing. It's just spending more.
Well, I assume also most ISPs have a policy saying that they're not supposed to send out messages to people that don't want to receive these messages. Most ISPs have an acceptable use policy for all their customers.
Yeah.
And if you chose to enforce your own policy, then the spam would probably would be able to do what they're doing. And we would have to be involved.
All they did was run a website. All they did was maintain a website.
He maintained a website, and how did people send it out through his website?
They did commercial spend and was done independently. All he did was run the website that was advertised by spend and sent out somewhere else.
And he never had any approval, so he'll just use this through a relay system?
It had nothing to do with the .com university. He was just, you blackballed him because he was a support system, a support
So I need to cut this short, and then we can just get one more extension. But John, maybe you can start distributing the blank sheets and papers. This may seem familiar. I've only asked you to do it once so far this term. I'm hoping to do it again, which is to say a feedback memo, which is a quick note from the last few minutes we have, asking for your biggest question, whatever that may be. Not necessarily a stressful question to ask your biggest question, but a question on your mind. Your biggest thought, anything you want to share, is there a statement about the class, or the substance of the class, and anything you want to say to me, or to Rebecca, or to John, directly. Those three things, I guess I'll put that up on the screen here, and then should you choose your name, something to get back in touch with you, if you have something that you'd like to answer, your name, and whether or not this can be shared. Those are the things. Yeah. Oh yes, that's not announcement. There are more meetings, but not anymore, at the distribution center to cover the two student-led classes that are right around the corner. They are available now at the distribution center, where you can pick them up tomorrow, and they're also, if they're not online yet, they will be very soon. And they are for the days in which we're going to look at the internet in China and Singapore and elsewhere, and also the day for which we're going to today, kids. A reprise of protecting kids on the internet, for which we will be visited by Don Talaj, not only the former chief negotiator for network solutions and the domain name boards, but the chairman of the COPA Commission, the commission formed out of the Children's Online Protection Act, looking at all sorts of different ways of protecting kids. So the readings pertaining to those 2 days are now available from the distribution center, in addition to being online. Say what? Is there a bot for next week? Given that you have papers to do, and given that Thanksgiving is in the middle, we have a lot to wait a minute.
Yes. But we're going to have an optional bot question. So the video and that one will be sent out, and you can choose to respond to it.
And if you respond, does it answer credit or something?
It can all fill in for Thanksgiving list.
It can fill in for Thanksgiving list.
We haven't really decided what the...
There's going to be all sorts of topics. People are going to have so many questions about how to account for this. This is only for the glory of it. This is a bot question you're free to ignore, free in the middle zone to think about with some idea that might be talked about in class, or free to answer should you choose. I think that's the fairest way to do it rather than... Yeah. Yes?
This
area. Yeah, this area.
Yeah. Real quick, yeah, there's going to be a kind of rotisserie question out. It's something to think about, chew on, prepare for class, and you can make it in the right direction. The other thing is, the readings themselves, I'm not sure if you can actually download it and readable to live behind that. So unless John's done that without my knowing. So I think you need to pick up the packet of readings. There will be sites to link to, kind of like Casey does on the internet there. You can look through some things, sites, but there's reading you actually need physical copies. So that's it.
All right, so there will be a bot question, but in no way will you be judged upon whether or how to answer it. That's what I want to emphasize. It's not even an extra credit kind of stuff. That seems the simplest way to do it, and it's just sort of a Thanksgiving kind of break. Good. All right. Any other questions while we do this? No? All right, I'll pull up the rest of it, but I guess it's that important. And since now, given we're running these things, class will end in November rather than May, maybe we should thank our guest right now. anybody who's interested in dinner and wants to talk more about this, you might want to wander down the well and have dinner.